Welcome to Take Back the Universe Loves to Laugh here at Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM or worldwide, radio.dominican.edu. I am your host, Barbara McVeigh. We got big things to talk about here on Take Back, and we have an agenda. As our planet faces major environmental challenges, we like to remain positive. There's hope. We're still alive. Here at Take Back, we try to get deep into understanding these issues and ask big questions about what does it mean to be human and where are we going wrong on planet Earth. Each Wednesday, here at noon, we have thinkers, poets, writers, educators, musicians, and environmentalists help us get it right and navigate this crazy journey called life. Maybe we'll get inspired to make some big changes and look at who we have been and why. Today is November 1st, and though I do not have any guests today, I got a few things to share. First off, I just really want to wish everyone a happy, is that the right word? A Day of the Dead. Today is the Day of the Dead, primarily Mexican celebration to remember our past loved ones and to talk about death in order to talk about life. That's a famous line from Dr. Don Gross, Dying to Talk Radio, who has a radio show called Dying to Talk, because when you do talk about death or the ones who have died before us, it helps us to remember what's important about life. And one of those things about life is the ability to do things, the ability to speak, the ability to share, and the ability to love. We like to stay positive here. So I got thinking about what did I wanted to do today for the show, because there are so many topics to talk about, right? I mean, our country is going crazy right now. I don't know about you, but I've had to step away from social media. Yes, I like my Facebook page. You probably do too. But what can you distill from all of that noise that comes at us every single day, whether it's in the newspaper, on the radio, social media? And what is real and what is not real? Because I think we're all getting completely dumbed down by all of it. And this is an important time to remember what is important. Because, well, next week is Election Day, November 7th, next week. And, you know, last week as I was thinking about this radio show today, I thought, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the radio show. I'm going to take a look at all the ballot issues. I'm going to have somebody come in and we're going to really walk through each of the ballot issues so we can really understand how we're going to vote next week. This was my plan last week. I thought, okay. And, you know, like you, maybe, I don't know, maybe you're better than I am, but I have been so busy with life, I haven't been able to sit down and look at those ballot issues to find out what I will be voting on. So I sat down at my kitchen table. I got my little ballot out, which got mailed to me, and I was all happy and proud of myself that I was going to look at my ballot to say, okay, I'm going to learn about all these issues, who's in favor of them, who's not in favor of them, and I'm really going to nail this one. And so I opened up my ballot only to see a couple of names on it. There were no ballot issues to vote on this election. There were just names of our city council members and so forth in the town where I'm at. Maybe yours. Maybe you have different issues to vote on. But it just made me realize, God, I am just completely out of the loop. I can't keep up with it all. I raise my hand. I can't keep up with it all. So the intention was there. I was ready to get down and dirty and try to understand all the ballot issues, but I guess this was practice for next time we vote. So then I thought, gosh, well, what do I talk about for an hour? I don't have a guest. And with that, I thought, my gosh, there is so much to talk about. There is so much to talk about. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, besides all those other things I wanted to talk about, is this book. Because I think this pretty much kind of wraps up everything that I'm thinking. And it's all in a book that was actually given to me as a gift here at Dominican University of California on my final day of graduation, when I graduated from the humanities department here. This was back in May. And my professors gave me this fantastic book called The Betrayal of the American Dream. And the authors are Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele. You know, like you, I've been just going like, why are we having all these problems? I mean, the homeless rate. I had to step over homeless people to get to a fundraiser in San Francisco 3 weeks ago. The alleyways are filled with homeless people in San Francisco. While I'm walking down a street, a woman, she might have been in her 70s, thin and frail, very dirty. She was in a wheelchair without legs. She had no legs from the knee down. And she came wheeling up to me and she said, "Honey, it's my birthday today. Do you have a dollar or two?" And I looked at her and I thought, oh my gosh. And so I asked her, "How old are you today?" And she says, "I'm 72 years old. And I looked at this woman in a wheelchair with no legs, filthy dirty. And I looked down the street and I saw more homeless people. And I said, this is not right. How did my city, and I say my city because I lived in San Francisco for about 10 years, become so inhumane? How is that possible? This woman should be taken care of. She's 72 years old. And she's asking me for a dollar or two. Well, I gave her $10. You know? And it's like that wasn't even enough. But and that $10, it's not going to get her very far. Maybe it'll get her a meal. Maybe it'll get her something. But what have we become? And then I was thinking of it as I kept walking and looking at the skyscrapers and the city line and beautiful, beautiful city line of San Francisco. And, you know, it's also one of the wealthiest cities in the entire world. Entire generation, young generation of people making, I think you're considered poor if you make under $100,000. You know, and rents are now, I'm not kidding you, a one bedroom, I think, goes for, what was the median? $2,700. Who is making a buck? That's what I want to know. Who is making a buck off of the backs of all these other people? Because it's getting worse now than it ever has before. So reading this book, The Betrayal of the American Dream, it's really hard to read it because page by page, you just put it down and you get so irate and go, how is it that our educational system today is not addressing these very issues? And why are we not talking about it? I mean, being polite is done. We're done being polite. It is time to get angry. Okay, so Betrayal of the American Dream, Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele. They are also authors of, it's a number one bestseller, America Went Wrong. So what went wrong? Well, I've talked on the show before about Ronald Reagan, because that's really where everything started to go really, really wrong. Because what we're experiencing right now with Trump is really just a mirror of what happened with Ronald Reagan. You see, we were on a good track, not a pretty track, but we were on a good track in the 1970s when we understood our environmental problems, well documented. Global climate change was well documented. When President Jimmy Carter was trying to get us on track and make the switch to sustainable energy. And he also said, very boldly, said people were beginning to value those who have instead of what it is they do. And we've been on that track, folks, I'm sorry to say, for the last 35 years. It's the rich guys who have the voice. And I'm not afraid to say it. Bill Gates, what are you doing talking about education? You were a bully. You are an absolute bully running down all the little mom and pop shops so you could build your empire. And now you're talking to us about education? Oh, I so don't think so. Know your place is what Dr. Sylvia Earle says, and I'm going to stand by that. You know, let the educators deal with education. And even that, I'm not quite sure who the educators are these days. And I'll get on that subject in a moment. I am going to dedicate this show to this book, The Betrayal of the American Dream, because I think we're all feeling it to some degree. And it's really time to use our aliveness, which comes with our voice and our mind and our heart and our soul, to speak up for what is right in this world. And what is going down right now is not right. Okay, so Betrayal of the American Dream. I hope I don't get in trouble by like talking about this book. I mean, this is a book review. This is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at some of the points that they talk about in this book and discuss it and to bring it to life in our present lives right now. Okay, 1980s, taxes paid averaged 47.9% of income. Okay? Okay, let me see if I can get this right here. In the nation's richest tax return filers had paid at the same rate as those 27 years earlier, the U.S. Treasury would have taken in a whopping $157 billion a year in added revenue. Okay? But what happened was the rich got what is called welfare. I mean, they're talking about the nice, you know, poor moms, single moms, often African-American moms who were being pillaged and not pillaged, what's the word, being ransacked for welfare when, you know, in the beginning of the 1980s under Reaganomics, it was the corporations who were getting the welfare. The richest people were getting the tax cuts. So it became a matter of subsidizing the rich. This is page 11. So in 1980, let me do this again because I didn't say that very clearly. Page 11. In 1980, the average CEO was paid about 42 times more than the average factory worker. Okay. By 1990, it had tripled. CEOs were making 325 times more than the factory workers. So you see, the whole equilibrium got completely whacked off. So this is called subsidizing the rich. Now, I'm going to put this in my own personal way. I'm working at a cafe, and I did this as an experiment just to see what it's like to work as a normal human being in this country. For a lot of people are behind the counters of Walmart and, you know, cafes and things like that. Well, I'm making 10 bucks an hour. And anything I say has nothing to do with the cafe. I mean, this is kind of average for people. $10 an hour. Okay, think about that. $10 an hour. What can you buy for $10 an hour in this world today? I think you can buy about 2 loaves of bread. Okay, so I have to work an entire hour in order to buy 2 loaves of bread for my family. Okay, that's, you know, not talking about the taxes that are pulled out of it and all that other stuff, transportation back and forth to the cafe, $10 an hour. Let me put this into perspective. 25 years ago, when I was a college student, a full-time college student, let me say that, I was making $13 an hour at a law firm in San Francisco. I had like a clerk job kind of thing while I was working my way through school. $13 an hour back then was considered low. Okay. So I can tell you I was also paying $600 a month in rent 25 years ago. So, you know, maybe those equations work out. You can actually squeak out a living, right? Today, I am paying rent, hold your breath, $2,700 a month. And that's the cheapest you can find in Marin County for a 2-bedroom. Yeah, I actually rent out my bedroom to another single mother with 2 children who can't afford living in Marin either. She makes, as a house cleaner, $8 to $10 an hour. $8 to $10 an hour. So which equals to about $20,000 a year. Now, can you imagine living off of $20,000 a year? Now, don't forget the kids. I mean, just yourself, $20,000 a year. Impossible. Impossible. Unless you have really, really cheap rent, which is not possible even in Marin County. So why should we live in Marin County, you're going to say? Yeah, good question. Well, you know, you need cafe workers. You need teachers. We need house cleaners. We need gardeners. We need the full fabric of society because we're all part of the formula. So it goes to this. Who is skimming off the most vulnerable people? The most vulnerable people, they have become slaves to a system that does not work. And it has been abused by the people who are making the big bucks. And if you're making the big bucks, boy, I hope you're listening to this because I got a few things to say to you. You got an opportunity here to make things right. Absolutely. So Rigging the System, page 15 of this book, The Betrayal of the American Dream. For what has happened to jobs, retirement savings, and other vital signs of America's economic health, you can thank Congress and a succession of presidents who make the rules for the American economy. Okay? That is called an oligarchy. The wealthy elite who got power under Reagan. Because you see, Reagan is the one who said, okay, guys, my buddies, come on in. We're going to take over the country. Okay? That's called a corporate coup. It wasn't Trump. It was Reagan. These rules determine the kind of job you may have, how much you will pay in taxes, and whether you have health benefits or a pension. Okay? Oh, I can read this book and I can just go off. I mean, I think this is a book that college students should be reading. I think everybody should be reading. It puts things into perspective. Here's another one. Okay, so, you know, there used to be a point in time you got a job and you felt secure. You could raise your family without worrying day by day about whether you're going to get fired the next day and whether you're not going to be able to find a job, right? Because, boy, costs are expensive. And, you know, the very fact that you have to have a car, an added expense. I mean, just think about this one, okay? Here's the logic in this one. I'm going to digress for a moment. You need to have a car to get around in society today. What happened to trains? What happened to buses? What happened to a public transportation system that benefits everybody? Okay? Instead, you have to buy a car. Now, you know, the moment you buy a new car, which you know will probably not fall apart on you right away, the moment you drive it off the lot, it loses value. We know that. How did that, and why do we accept that? I would really like to know, why do we accept that? Somebody's making a buck, you buy it, and the moment you drive it off the lot and claim it as your own, you cannot flip it. You cannot turn it around and get the same amount for it. So you have to have a car. What does a car mean? A car means you have to have insurance. I know I pay about $800 insurance, and I got a 2003 Subaru, okay? It's kind of an old car now. $800 I have to pay. I know I have to pay straight away each year. Okay, there's that. I have to pay for maintenance. Now the maintenance is getting a little bit more. And is that cheap? Oh, gosh, no. You ruin a taillight. Do you know how much a taillight costs these days? Let's see. If I'm making $10 an hour, that means I have to work, I think, about 3 days, three full days at 8 hours in order to put my car in the shop, have that taillight fixed, blah, 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 blah. You get my point. It's impossible. Okay. Then you have insurance, smog certificate. That's another one. Registration, all a huge host of costs just in order to have a car to get around to a job, to the grocery store and other things that you might need because our system has been created to support the automobile. Okay. Should I start talking about fossil fuels now? Yeah, I might as well since I'm on the track. This is a rant hour. This is what we're going to talk about. This is a rant hour. This is Barbara's rant because I start talking about this and I really, I'm glad I can vent in this padded room behind a closed door. And I hope you're listening because maybe you'll start ranting too. You should rant. You are alive. There are major problems. And if you are alive and not dead, then you ought to be facing, we all ought to be taking a stand for our voices and what is right in this world. So gasoline in the car. I filled up my car yesterday. It was about $40. That's about fair. And that lasts me depending on how much I drive. I try not to drive too much. but I have to drive in order to get places. Otherwise, I'm going to spend the entire day, maybe 2 days, on a bus getting from point A to point B. And that's if the bus comes, because the bus is so bad. So gas, I have to buy gas. So every time I inject gas into my car, I feel like I'm shooting up on heroin. There is no difference to me. I am injecting something into my car as if it were heroin into my own body that is bad for me. Bad for you. We know about global climate change. Okay? We know about it. We've known about this since the 1970s. And every time I put fuel into my car, I am contributing to this very, very bad problem that my children and their children are going to have to deal with. Obama said it the best. We are the first generation to feel the effects of climate change, and we are the last generation to have the opportunity to do something about it. So, I mean, do I just go off the grid? Do I just, you know, get rid of my car? I'm kind of stuck. It's a system that I was born into that I got to deal with. So there you go. I got my car. So now I have paid taxes, my money, your money, for roads, right? The freeways, the roads, all the city roads, that all comes out of my money, your money, all of our taxes. But somebody's making a buck off of making those roads. So I'm paying somebody to make roads. I'm paying for the entire system while somebody else is gaining the profits of selling me the car, selling me the fossil fuels, selling me the insurance, paying all of this stuff. Me as the consumer stuck in a system, I am paying for all of that. Okay, so why can't I turn all of that money around and demand a train that makes me feel good about going from point A to point B and doesn't rip me off? Because that's how I'm feeling. And you should be feeling that way too, completely ripped off. So who's making a buck? It's the automobile companies. Talk about welfare. Boy, they got us paying for everything. We are paying. Are we suckers? We're complete suckers. We have been complete suckers this entire time. We're paying our taxes for the roads, which they benefit from. And I don't know. You know. And then we're going to get blamed for global climate change because our kids are going to look at us and go, oh my goodness, Mom, what did you do to us? And it's like, I didn't do anything. Really? It wasn't my fault. But we're going to get blamed. I got off track here, but boy, that one just burns me up. All right, back to jobs. What went wrong? Okay, so we're all living in this little state of fear these days. I mean, global climate change, yeah, that's one. You know, and that's even more fearful because our government is trying to say, oh, it doesn't exist. It's all in your head. So now we're just beginning to think we're crazy and talking about the earth being flat. Have you heard that one? Oh my God. We're not suckers, people. We are really smart people. Own that. Page 100 in this great book, The Betrayal of the American Dream by Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele. I'm giving them credit because this is a fantastic book. They talk about job security. That's what I was talking about before I digressed on fossil fuels. A little snippet here. This is about this guy who had a programming job. His employer, Bank of America, I'm going to say that one real loud. Bank of America, they were the ones who were supporting the Dakota Pipeline access, North Dakota, fossil fuels. His employer, Bank of America, did what so many companies now do to their employees. After years of dedicated service, one day they're told they're being replaced. Not because they haven't worked hard enough, not because they aren't dedicated to their jobs, not because they're not educated or qualified. They're being replaced because the company, thanks to federal policies, those people who are making the policies in Congress can hire someone else a lot cheaper. Ooh, boy, that lot cheaper part of it just filled the CEO's pocketbooks a little bit more. Boy, are we suckers? How did we let that happen? Well, I'll tell you how we let that happen. We knocked off the unions. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And I told you about my dad, who was a union man, and he stood up in 1981 against Ronald Reagan, the one who took down the unions. Didn't understand that one for a long time, but that little act back in 1981 with my father, which took many years for me to understand the significance of that, triggered this country and that oligarchy, they are an oligarchy, into a reduction, elimination of unions across the country. The unions were the ones who were fighting for the little guy, right? The little guy, the people. And without that voice, the union voice, we got bulldozed. That's why I'm making $10 an hour at a cafe and barely surviving and buying 2 loaves of bread for an hour. Can you imagine? I mean, just go through your own head. $10 an hour. What can you do with $10 an hour? It's sad. It's really, really sad. And while we are not like the entire country going on strike right now, we should be. I mean, if anybody's listening to me, that's what I'm calling. This entire country, all the people should step out of their houses, raise those signs and say, we are not accepting this anymore. This is a country for the people. For the people. Education. Okay. So I got my master's degree, and I, you know, anything I say too, I don't want to disparage, and it might sound that way, but it's not really disparaging. It's actually about talking hard about hard truths. Okay. When you can face up to the hard truths rather than living this idea that everything's happy, go, you know, then you can deal with them. You can go, whoa, horse, put on the brakes. We got a problem. And instead of pointing the finger and blaming, we can just all just stop and go, this is a problem. How do we fix it? Okay. And I think that's a really important message I want to convey. You know, now there are some bad cats out there, and I am not afraid to call them on it. And, you know, and really honestly, if you are in the 1%, you have the highest responsibility to this country right now to start giving back. And that's my message. If you've got money, it's give back time. Big time. Actually, we're going to start talking about that next week. I got a new podcast coming out in a couple of weeks called Give Back. We're going to talk about ways to give back because we all can do it. You don't have to be the 1%. The education trap. Okay, so this is on page 124 of The Betrayal of the American Dream by Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele. And it is this question about what education has become. Now, this question really started to open up for me when I was homeschooling my daughter specifically. She, my son too, but more my daughter, because we stepped out of the mainstream educational model. And why did I do that? Because it just didn't feel right. I couldn't even intellectualize why I was doing it. It was all through this feeling of looking at our local public school and going, I do not want this for my daughter. I don't know why. It just feels wrong. I think I can do better. And as a result, I am going to pat myself on the back because I did do better. After 4 years of homeschooling my daughter in a very tight-knit community of homeschoolers, we were very careful with how we spent. We were very communal. We were very cooperative. My daughter ended up going back to middle school, public school, middle school, and scored in the top percentile. And I'm going to tell you, that was based on 7 hours of academics a week that she had. Okay, let me say that again. My daughter, while homeschooling, got about 7 hours of academics a week. The rest was her free time to follow her passions. So 7 hours a week, my daughter got academics in homeschooling. When she transferred to her public school, middle school, she scored in the top percentile. So I don't necessarily want that to be conveyed of like how great a job I did. That's not the meaning behind my words just now. The meaning behind my words is, what the heck are public schools doing with all that added time and all that money? There is a problem. And what I saw with my own daughter after she went back to school was a dumbing down. I mean, talk about child abuse. I was watching what she was doing, and I knew as an adult, I couldn't keep up with all that she was doing. I mean, she was being pummeled with homework, with information, with assignments, with writing, with this, with that. And it was like, you know, you have to do, you just start to crawl into this little hole of survival, of emotional survival, you know, and you're being told over and over again, this is what you have to do. You have to do this. You have to do that. After a while, you're not even able to hear yourself think. you know, or dream, or breathe, or just look at a flower grow and be awed by the wonder of life around us, you end up going into a hole. And when I saw that, I thought, oh my God, you know, I'm not just interested in helping my daughter. It's like, I think we got to band together on this one, because it's not just my kid's going to have to live with all these other kids in the world. And if I'm seeing it, others are too, and they are. We're all beginning to wake up to it. And really, is education about propagating a system that is not helping us, right? What is education? I think back at my own education, one of the things that like marred me, and I say that because it took me a long time to really recognize it, is I've always had this issue of thinking that I'm dumb. I always think somebody else has it right and I don't. I mean, it's this constant nag that's in my voice, in my head, going, you're dumb, Barbara. You don't know what you're talking about. That person knows a lot more than you do, so you better listen to them and follow them because you know nothing. You're dumb. And it occurred to me one day where that little voice in my head came from. And I remember third grade, I think it was, fourth grade, elementary school, standing in line, straight as an arrow, waiting to go into my teacher's class. You know, we're all, you know, kids giggling and so forth. And we're about ready to line up after recess and go into class. Well, right next to us was another line of kids going into another classroom. Those were the smart kids. They were in the special class. Mr., I don't remember his name. He was a really good teacher. Everyone liked him. Really creative. A very, very creative teacher. A lot of people really admired him. Well, all the smart kids, those kids who really knew what they were doing, got to go to his class. So in my little kid's brain, if they were the smart kids, we were the dumb kids. You know? That's what kids walk away with. It's very, very powerful. And it's an amazing way of creating a narrative about yourself that lives with you and will live with you for the rest of your life unless you recognize it. And still, that little voice in my head, whatever I am about to do, comes on, switches on in my brain. I mean, anything I do, whether it's a school paper I start to write, whether it's a speech I'm about to give, anything I do, I'll go, oh, I think, oh my God, I'm going to be found out. I'm really, really dumb. Yeah. I'm not saying this to say like, oh, feel sorry for me. It's really just a recognition of how education, and it's not necessarily what people say, but it's about what people do that can really get into your head and create the narrative about who it is that you are, you know? All the more reason to have people in our lives supporting us, supporting kids too, and listening to children. I'll tell you, kids are really smart. They're smarter than adults, I think. You know, they speak the truth. They see things that sometimes we don't see ourselves. And I hear that and I see that all the time. And I just want to be an advocate for kids. And so when I saw my own daughter being told what to do over and over again by teachers and grownups, it was like, wow. You know, one, we're streamlining these kids on a corporate level. I mean, you know, all the kids have to perform, are expected to perform the same. Test scores are what drive decisions about whether the kid is successful or not. Well, you know, could it just be a journey? And could we just be supporting the children where they are and think that, no, they're not all going to be mathematicians. Oh God, I hope not. I hate math. Now, is that bad about math? And is math bad? No, no, no. We need our mathematicians, but I want nothing to do with it. I'm really bad at it. At least that's what I tell them. Maybe I'm really smart at it, but there are other things that I like to do, right? And you do too. So we're not all equal on some formula-based mechanism that the schools have created. And that's how our schools are being run now, even more so. My daughter's in high school now. Technology is running amok. I mean, let's Can we question that? And who's making a buck off of that one? A $60 billion a year industry. Do you really think the tech businesses are looking at other ways that are more beneficial to teaching our children outside of the tech world? Is it possible that technology should not belong in the school at all? Some schools are saying that for good reason. Children are no longer learning how to write cursive. Are they going to start learning how to write with a pen altogether so we're all stuck on a computer keyboard? And is that education? Or is that just training kids how to be consumers of technology? Yeah. You know, and more, it's we parents are being judged about how involved we are with school. Well, I really don't want to be involved. I want my daughter to own it, you know, and now I'm being judged for that. I told my daughter, I think you can handle this by yourself. You know, I got your back, but I'm watching you. I want her to feel her mistakes. That's okay. It's okay to make mistakes when you're young, but if you make a mistake in school, oh my God, now you're a bad student. It's true. It's true. So the education trap, you know, and I think looking at this, is it Finland? Okay, wait, another digression. Finland just came out with, it was an article about the Finnish school. They have done away with school subjects. Pretty cool. They're going a very holistic approach, very much like the Waldorf method. And it's a system that we can actually start paying attention to. I just coughed. Sorry. I'm human. Okay, education trap. Now, we're also told that you gotta get an education, higher education. Yep, you're not gonna be anything without it. Now, how much does that cost today? Wow. Big bucks. So people are going in, getting an education, coming out with $100,000 school debt, sometimes more. Why? And who's making a buck off of that? I'd like to know. So page 124 on this great book, again, The Betrayal of the American Dream by Donald L. Bartlett and James B. Steele. They write, in fact, what education has done is create a false sense of security. The theory that all you need is a sheepskin and jobs will seek you out is not rooted in reality. To begin with, not everyone benefits from a college education. Truth to tell, tens of millions of Americans don't benefit from higher education. But that doesn't mean their potential contributions to society are any less worthwhile. To suggest that their contributions are insignificant is arrogant and also ignores the basic rules of the labor market. Isn't that true? Arrogant. To suggest that people who do not have a college education are insignificant is really a big wake-up call, because really what it starts to show us who it is that we are, you know? Instead of looking at a piece of paper and some, you know, something that somebody says, if you don't have this, then you're nothing, is an absolute arrogant way of being. Ask yourself that. And then start going around and looking at people who don't have a college education and just ask, what is it that they have that I don't have? Do they have culture? Do they have a perspective of life that I can learn from? Because we kind of all learn from one another. We can all learn from one another. And when you're open to that, life becomes a lot more meaningful. Do you go around talking about a fancy school that you came from? Well, some people might argue that you come from a privileged class. Did you get a leg up? And by getting a leg up, are you really being truthful to who it is that you are? Or maybe, and I know some people who fall in this category, do you feel like you're kind of in a false sense of who it is that you are? And maybe that wasn't fair, having the sense like you had got to be somebody, whatever that means, by having a particular piece of paperwork. Because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to raise my hand and say this. I feel dumber coming out of university. I do. I feel more dumb now with a master's degree than I did before I had a master's degree. I really, really do. Because you know what happened during those 3 years while I was getting a master's degree? Every time I opened a book, and read something profound and got jazzed by it, I also learned about 10 other books that I haven't read that offer powerful messages of knowledge or perspective. So I gained one book, but then I lost 10 others that I know I'm not going to be able to get around to read, but I know that they're there. And so there's this little nagging persistence going on with me going, what else is it that I don't know? You know, and I'm going to tell you, I fell flat on my face when I woke up to this one morning. Because, you know, I came to university and graduate school thinking, okay, I'm going to get a degree. I'm going to have that paperwork. That way people will listen to me. I'm smarter and I am more empowered. Yep, that's where I'm going to go. But the opposite thing happened. And it was like, oh my, the universe loves to laugh. That's the show. Take back, the universe loves to laugh. By getting a degree, I discovered that I'm even dumber than I was before. Because there is so much more I've learned that I don't know. So I've become more humble. Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's see. Right. Yeah. Even worse, going back to getting university degrees. No, here we go. By the end of 2011, total outstanding student debt loan in the United States totaled more than $1 trillion. That's more than all credit card debt. Okay. This is why when I'm bad at math, I can't even understand $1 trillion. That is the total. This is 6 years ago. It's probably more now. Total outstanding student loan debt in the United States totaled more than $1 trillion, which is more than all credit card debt. Whoa, what happened? You know? And the craziest thing about this is after you get that degree and that debt, chances are you're going to have a real hard time finding a job. What happened? Not only that, but you realize how dumb you are. Yeah. Okay, so what are we going to do about this? I don't know what to do about it. I don't know. But I'm asking the questions, and you got to start there. You got to start there. You know what they're doing in San Francisco? Bernie Sanders was recently at City College in San Francisco because they are going to be the first junior college to go tuition free. Hallelujah. I went to that school. Actually, I think I went to just about every junior college in the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm proud to say. City College, I liked City College. Debt-free. Can you imagine you go 2 years there, City College, tuition-free, and then you don't have 2 years worth of debt? It's pretty cool. That's kind of like the European model. I think most universities, I may not have this completely accurate, but it's pretty true, I think. Most universities in Europe are free. Right. So I don't know why some people say, and there are, you know, the rulers, those rich guys are saying, you know, well, gosh, if you offer university for free, you're not going to value it. And this is when I would like to say, when you have to spend money in order to value something? Right. There are so many things I do in life where I'm not paying out or I'm not getting that I do that's valuable, right? Like helping a friend, raising kids, having a partner who you care about, having a dog and feeding it. I don't know. Can you come up with some more? I mean, there are so many things you do in the world that has nothing to do with money, but has to do with incredible value. So I'd like to know, when did money have to be associated with that? I don't know what's happening to the world. Okay. And besides which, I'm just here in a padded room behind a locked door talking to myself. So what do I know? The other good one recently has been, this isn't in the book. This is one of my little side notes. As you know, there's been a huge backlash against immigrants in this country. I'm pretty excited to create a project that I'm just getting started on Friday that I hope to launch in January. early next year to show a film about immigrants, specifically from Guatemala, who made the passage, you know, through Mexico, crossing two borders to get into this country in order to work. Some call them illegal, some call them criminal, call them what you want. I'm going to call them war refugees myself, unlabeled war refugees. And so I've been seeing some things on Facebook and other places about, you know, these guys are here, they're taking jobs, they're doing this, they're doing that, you know, crime rate, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, okay, let's think about this. Most of these immigrants make about $10 an hour, $8 to $10 an hour, actually. Yeah, maybe some of them don't pay taxes. Okay, that's fine. But who's benefiting from their low wages? Most of them are involved in agriculture, picking the fruit, vegetables, things like that in the fields. Most of them are involved in house cleaning these big fancy homes, specifically in Marin County. Others are doing the gardening work for 10 bucks an hour. Did I say that again? And other things. So we're kind of benefiting from those low wages because we're not having to pay out, right? So we're kind of getting a little part of that deal, I'd say. Then you add to that another layer. As Americans, we can go to their countries. Costa Rica has an incredibly large American expat community, as does Argentina, as does Chile. But I'm going to focus on Central America, which also includes Guatemala. So Americans can go to Guatemala and purchase property. Americans can go to Central America and benefit from either low or zero healthcare payments or services. Americans can go down there and benefit from a moderate, pretty inexpensive lifestyle. Americans can go down there and create entire communities, much like San Jose del Cabo in Mexico, right at the tip. I went there after 20 years, only to realize that a little Mexican town that I remembered seeing 20 years ago has turned into a completely gentrified European little American little town, displacing all the Mexicans who are now reduced to workers and wage earners. So Americans can go retire down there and live a pretty cheap lifestyle, right? Because it's hard to be a retired American living in the United States. So where is the justice in that? So Guatemalans, for example, have crossed two borders to get here in order to squeak out a little bit of a living. They've learned how to live very communally. Actually, that comes a lot from their own communities in Guatemala, especially in the indigenous communities. And now they're up here, slave wage earners, and are considered criminal. So in January or February, we're still working it out, we're going to hold a little conference on this, which I very much look forward to working with the Consul General of Guatemala and other people here in the immigrant community to say, you know, it's kind of time to start sticking up for yourself. And I'm going to be that person to stick up for you too. Because this is simply wrong. Well, I've been ranting and raving quite a bit. And I think it is the time to rant. But it's time to rant in a positive way. Because by recognizing some of these hard truths, it kind of wakes up to our current situation, realizing, wow, we got some problems here. But we also have incredible opportunity. Wow! Because we get to be the generation to say, wow, we're not the ones who created the problems. We are the ones who solved the problems. We get to feel good about ourselves. And that's the stand I'm trying to take. What does that take, though? I like to look at history and try to find some people to give us inspiration. So there's this chick, this woman. Her name is Victoria Woodhull. Have you ever heard of her? Victoria Woodhull. I never heard of her until maybe about 5 years ago when I was homeschooling my daughter and we were doing we got inspired to learn about women and the stand that they had to take in the 1800s in order to simply vote. To simply vote. It sounds so ridiculous. Actually, it's beginning to seem less ridiculous because we are certainly headed into a time right now where women are becoming second-class citizens again. And we got to remember what they went through. Victoria Woodhull, I'm going to talk about in just a minute, what the women had to do in order to take a stand just to vote, to be viewed as a human being with a brain who actually has some good ideas, right? Because I think a lot of women through time kind of felt like me, like we're the dumb ones. Well, no, you are not. You actually are probably the smart ones. We've just been duped. So Victoria Woodhull, who I never learned about in school, I never learned about in books, I never learned about on the mainstream level, I ran across her because I was writing a book and I was trying to find women leaders. And as I was Googling, I came across her name. I'm all, who is this woman? Well, Victoria Woodhull was a woman 100 years ahead of her time, okay? And so few people have heard of her today, but she actually ran for president of the United States in the election of 1872, right? She was one of the most famous women in the country at that time. She advocated for things that we take for granted today, including the 8-hour workday, right? Graduated income tax, social welfare programs, and profit sharing. And some of those, you could consider her being a communist, which some people have labeled her as being because of profit sharing. You know, the idea of equaling the system a little bit more, right? Kind of like those rich guys kind of sharing their profits. Well, maybe that's, you know, profit sharing is a nice way of putting that. I would say stop being greedy, people. Start sharing on a better level. So, yeah, she was an incredible writer. And she was the first woman to own, publish, or run a newspaper. Can you imagine that? The first woman to address Congress. The first woman to address a congressional committee. And the first woman to have a seat on the New York Stock Exchange. Whoa! Who was this woman? She was incredible. When Hillary Clinton was running for president, everyone kept saying, oh, she's the first one. No, there was somebody else before her. And why have we not heard about her? Right? Why have we not heard about our heroes? And why are we not revering them? Can you imagine? Let's go back to another one that we might know of a little bit more. That was Susan B. Anthony, who's on the back of a coin, on the face of a coin. The dollar that we always get confused with as a quarter. And I'm not sure why that happens, because then we get angry because we mess up our coinage and then we get mad at Susan B. Anthony. Sorry. Do we? No, we don't do that. But she should not be confused at all by anyone of us, by her efforts, what it is that she did for us. And I'm speaking as a woman. And however you describe yourself as being a woman these days. I'm not going to go there in this broadcast, but these women were beaten. I'm not kidding you. Beaten, right? In order to vote. Can you imagine what they must be viewing us as today by not taking elections seriously? It is the one act you can do that is sanctioned, that gives you a voice in the outcome of our leadership. And now we understand the importance of good leadership. She gave an incredible speech. I'm going to read a little bit of it. I'm running out of time here. I got to find out when she gave this speech. It was a powerful speech. But I have the speech here in front of me. I'm just going to read a little bit of it to bring Susan B. Anthony to life a little bit more. Friends and fellow citizens, I stand before you tonight under indictment for the alleged crime of having voted at the last presidential election without having a lawful right to vote. It shall be my work this evening to prove to you that in thus voting, I not only committed no crime, but instead simply exercised my citizens' rights, guaranteed to me and all United States citizens by the national Constitution, beyond the power of any state to deny. the preamble of the federal constitution says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." It was we, the people, not we, the white male citizens, nor yet we, the male citizens, but we, the whole people, who formed the Union. And we formed it not to give the blessings of liberty, but to secure them. Not to the half of ourselves and the half of our posterity, but to the whole people, women as well as men. And it is a downright mockery to talk to women of their enjoyment of the blessings of liberty, while they are denied the use of the only means of securing them provided by this democratic Republican government, the ballot. She goes on, but boy, we got to remember that we, the people, because at this point in the game, we're not just even talking about women. I mean, it's all part of the formula, but we're talking about the people, not the elite, not the ruling class, but the people. And it's time that we, the people, take charge, you know? And we have had our leaders ahead of us show us what it takes in order to make that happen. And I know, for me, you know, I'm not going to stand for $10 an hour. Now, am I going to go to my employer who's an independent shop, cafe? I mean, they're struggling as an independent shop because it's not that, they're not the problem. It is the corporate ruling elite class that believes that they can be the voice of the people, you know? And if we are alive, if you are alive, it is time to use your voice and say no more. Because all of that gets wrapped up in the bigger issues today. Global climate change. We cannot stand by anymore. As Obama said, we are the first generation to feel climate change. We are going to be the last ones to have a say in what happens. So next week, November 7 is election day. Pull out your ballots, find out what you're voting for, and remember, it is time to get involved on every single level. It is give back time now. How do I want to end this show? Inspirationally. That's how I want it. I feel so lucky to be able to have a voice right now with you. And I don't take that for granted. And anything it is that I say, it's for the positive. Because this is the positive. We are the generation who get to be the positive change makers. And it's a duty. And it's a gift in order to make that happen. You know, and if you're part of the last generation, maybe it's time to open up to the possibilities of what you can give back at this point in time and say, this generation, we've done a few things that weren't right. And we're awakening up to them now. We're awakening up to them. I'm not saying that right. We are waking up to them. Yes. Let's get on it. Consider running for an elected office. Do it. You can do it. You're not dumb like me. You can do it. It is time to be bold and to do the unthinkable and to know you yourself are alive and can make it happen. This is Take Back. The universe loves to laugh. I'm Barbara McVeigh. It's been a pleasure. Next week we have, who do we have? I think Felicia Gaston. Now talk about aliveness. This is a woman who's feeding her dreams years later by creating dreams for others. And we're going to learn about Felicia Gaston next week. Happy Day of the Dead to everyone. Remember those before you. Remember those that we've loved. Remember, death is just a reminder of what it means to be alive. And on that, let's turn on some music. Last week, José Neto performed, and he was on our show not long ago. And my favorite track of his off of his new album called Other Shore. This is the José Neto Band. And At Times We Do Forget. See you next week, and talk to you then. Bye-bye. Thank you.